Vasquez, Operations Manager, Fire Department for Lexapool. He is an active member of the Fairhaven, New Jersey Fire Department, serving as Chief from 2012 to 2015. He is also a member of the Fairhaven First Aid Squad and the Red Bank, New Jersey Fire Department. Scott is also an attorney and has spent his legal career advising municipalities and fire departments on risk management, human resources, and labor relations issues. His undergraduate degree in industrial and labor relations was received from Cornell University and his law degree from Sunny Law, Buffalo. In this podcast, we're going to answer a couple key questions. One, we'll discuss what risk do we want to reduce? Two, do we want to change fire culture and behavior? And three, should we have policy chase behavior or behavior chase policy? We hope you enjoy listening and talk soon. So Scott, within the fire service, what risk are we really working to reduce?
Well, you can look at it from two perspectives. One is from a straight legal perspective in terms of what risks are we trying to reduce from a liability perspective? And there are plenty of attorneys out there who are very good at that. You know, Kurt Verone being a leader and a friend of mine who can give a great assessment of that. But when it comes down to what's the bottom line is you don't want anyone to die. You don't want to get that call that one of your members was killed or seriously injured, and you really don't want to get a call that a member of the public may have been killed on one of your calls. So that's really what you want to stop. And after that, you want to stop any member from being a danger to themselves or a danger to others. You want to make sure that you're doing what you need to do to make sure that there is that your members are all psychologically healthy, and that if they're not, they know where to turn to, so that there are good mental health programs, and you're reducing the chance of suicide or assault or injury to another member or the public. Beyond that, you want to make sure that no one in your department's being bullied, no one in your department is being harassed, and that there is no discriminatory activity or retaliatory activity going on. Because it's really those types of issues that can lead to someone being a danger to themselves or others, or death. So that's really the bottom line in terms of what risk you're trying to reduce.
Yeah, and it seems like within the fire service now, where of course line of duty deaths are tragic, and those are things that we really look to reduce. But it seems like there's the growth of heart attack, suicide, and cancer that is really driving the firefighter deaths that we see and first responder deaths across the board. And a lot of that ties into culture and behavior. So I'd love for you to elaborate on kind of what are culture and behavior, how are they different, and how does culture and behavior tie into reducing the risk of these different deaths?
Okay. I think one of the ways to look at it is, what would you really want to change? You know, we use policy to drive change in the fire service through reducing risk. So do you really want to change a culture? And a culture is, you know, the custom social institutions, failings and achievements of the fire service or any other larger institution. That's really tough to change. And why would you try to tackle that? What you want to focus more on is behavior. And the behavior is the way in which a member of the fire service acts or conducts themselves, especially when they're acting towards others. And using policy to change behavior rather than culture creates a much easier path for a fire officer. It allows focus on training. It allows focus on a specific behavior that you're trying to change, rather than a culture, trying to change the culture of the fire service.
So those specific behaviors, like what would be an example of policy to influence a specific behavior?
Okay. So let's say you have an anti-retaliation policy or a conduct and behavior policy that includes reference to prohibitions on bullying. You may get a response that Hey, look, it's always been the culture of the fire service that we're gonna give some trouble to the probie. We're gonna haze the probie, and if they don't get that, then they didn't get the full. They're really not inducted into the culture of the fire service. That's a real tough thing to try to tackle. But if you have a policy that prohibits bullying and hazing, and you can train on that policy so that members are learning that a different behavior, that it's prohibited. It is you're training on it so that there are scenarios that you go through that may demonstrate what's right and what's wrong. And there's an avenue for reporting of the behavior that is not going to result in any kind of retaliation. And that there is a disciplinary procedure for violation of that policy, and you're applying that policy consistently, that's how you're driving a change in behavior, rather than simply saying, hey, you know, you're not supposed to bully the guy. So that's an example I would use for the difference in what you're trying to change.
And you always hear in politics, you hear the carrot and the stick, where sometimes you can have a policy, but if there's no stick behind it, people won't do anything. Or if there's no carrot incentive, they won't do anything. Mm-hmm. Do you see different carrot or stick type motives or kind of incentives top down to actually make sure this change happens? Not just saying, hey, let's do this change and let's hope. You know, I hear often your hope is a losing strategy. You know, are there different carrot and stick strategies that might actually work in the fire service compared to other industries?
Well, you're getting into a really interesting issue, and a lot of it is generational. I started in the fire service in 1980. I went through the traditional stuff. But if I tried or if any of my members tried pulling the same kind of stuff on a Gen Xer or a Gen Y, the result would not be very positive. They're not going to tolerate it. It's completely opposite to how they were brought up and how they believe they're supposed to be treated. So you're getting into the larger issue of recruitment and retention, but that's part of it. What's the carrot and the stick for this for those generations? It's, you know, a chief who the first thing that he does when he gets a new guy in, as a probie in, pulls him into the office and says, hey, next week I'd like you to give a presentation to your crew on X, Y, and Z. I'd like you to give a presentation on bullying and hazing. I'd like to give a presentation on this policy that we have regarding fire structure fire response. And all of, you know, what you're doing is you're accomplishing two things. You're empowering that individual who is comfortable immediately, because that's the kind of environment they were educated in many times with that generation. And you're sending a signal to the rest of the crew that this is how he gets treated or she gets treated. So you can look at it that way. You can also look at it as the very simple practice of a chief walking out on the floor, picking up a mop and standing next to that probie and talking to the probie while they're both mopping the floor for a little while. Those are, I don't know if that's the kind of thing you were thinking of, but that's the way I think about it from a leadership position in terms of how I want to influence both the probie and the crew.
Yeah, no, well said. And I mean, there's no necessarily right or wrong way to accomplish it, but the goal is ultimately how to me, it does really seem like it is a top-down led initiative from the fire chief to the probies, to the fire captains, to all the other firefighters. And if the fire chief isn't bought in, then often you're not going to see really anything change. And I know there's a lot of studies going on that talks about fire service culture. Mm-hmm. And if this culture, the top down, doesn't have a culture of safety, or doesn't have a culture tied around wellness, or doesn't have a culture that prioritizes these things you talked about, whether it's bullying or wellness or mental health, then it just doesn't happen. And so that was a good example you just mentioned. But can you think of maybe some other top-down fire departments around the country where fire chiefs are doing a good job about putting these wellness priorities first and how they're actually benefiting from that?
Before I mention anything specific, I'd want to take a second look. There are departments that are doing a very good job with it, but if you wanted to, revisit that, I'd be happy to do it.
Yeah, no problem. And I think that kind of ties in, I guess, the next question I wanted is with a top-down fire chief or fire department, they can have these policies and they can push them in and hopefully they implement them correctly. That's the goal. And you see a lot of new tech hitting the market, whether it's virtual reality, whether it's drones, whether it's wearables, whether it's new hardware. And these tools seem to be actually driving policy as opposed to maybe the fire departments and fire chiefs actually figuring out how to use this technology. And so that's the case of just technology moving so fast and us figuring out how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So within the fire service, do you think that policy should be chasing behavior, or that we fire departments should be kind of directing how these widgets are used?
Well, no. Policy should not chase behavior. Behavior should be created by the policy. So when you want to anticipate your problems before they arise, and that can be anything from discrimination policies, sexual harassment policies that you institute after the horse is out of the barn and you've already been sued, or there's been a larger personal issue within the fire department. And by the way, when you talk about top down, you can't avoid that this is a top down system. We're quasi military. It's the way it has to be. So without the buy-in from a chief, nothing gets done successfully. But when going back to your comment, if you tie it to technology, you can look at something like drones. A lot of fire departments started using drones before they had a policy in place for them. And there are a lot of issues tied into, pardon me, use of drones that can violate constitutional rights of individuals. Especially, you've had situations where drones are flying over a fire scene and then they kind of wander off to the neighbor's house and start, the person operating the drone is kind of enjoying the scenery in the neighbor's house rather than what's going on the fire scene. You're violating an individual's constitutional rights. In terms of how they're operated, there are Department of Transportation and FAA guidelines and regulations that need to be followed. So without that policy in place, the minute you raise that drone up in the air, you're starting to create problems. That policy should be in place before you even lift the drone off the pad, so that your training is in place, your record keeping is in place, your limitations on how it can be used are in place, and you can implement technology successfully without all of a sudden creating a problem, and now you're putting policy in place to try to solve the problem you created yourself by not having that policy ready to go.
Yeah, it seems like a little bit of the putting the cart before the horse with this new technology. But on the flip side, I also sometimes struggle with the fact that it can take years, if not decades, to create a policy. Let's say I know some of the new policy that goes through NFPA or UL or OSHA, as well intended as the policy creation to drive behavior is, we are experiencing a time where technology and the need for technology is moving very quick. So how do you see policy also trying to kind of take form of this rapid adoption, or at least rapid creation, rapid editing, and rapid adoption? I mean, do you see that policy moving faster as well as the technology, or do you still think policy is being very slow and methodical?
Well, one of the best places to turn for an initial policy when you're dealing with something like that, let's say you're dealing with drones, let's continue the example. You're going to find that most of the manufacturers have sample policies, okay? And you can start with that. You can start with some general information. And then there are companies like ours that are in the business of working to anticipate the needs of the fire service, law enforcement, and custody, so that we can work to create policies that don't lag behind the technology too much, and we can provide our clients with the type of policies that they need to implement the technology. But that's always a problem.
Yeah.
And we just work to limit that issue as much as possible, because we're in the risk minimization business.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And risk mitigation. And then, it's funny, there's also some technology that gets taken for granted very quickly. So like thermal imaging cameras, you really don't see many thermal imaging camera policies. Nor do you see many thermal imaging camera technology, nor do you see the technology being incorporated into a current policy. So like fire investigations or a report of smoke, what's your policy for that response? Generally, having the thermal imaging camera should be a necessity and should be required, but it's just become kind of a handy tool. And there's no policy for when it should be used or requiring its use, and it kind of gets lost. That should be incorporated into any response policy. So sometimes technology just gets taken for granted, and you don't see anything developed on it.
Yeah. So within your perspective, what defines a good policy and procedure?
A policy is, first it starts with the purpose and scope. The policy provides guidelines to assist in minimizing the risk of fire department members contracting and or spreading COVID-19. And then who this applies to. It applies to all EMS and firefighters dispatched on a call for service. Okay, so the policy is that the fire department is committed to providing a safe work environment for its members. And the policy, and until otherwise proven, all members should treat every patient as having an infectious disease. You take the policy as the first sentence. That's what the department is committed to, providing a safe work environment for its members. Then you get into the procedure. Okay, how do we implement that? How do we put that into place? Well, first thing we do is establish incident command. Second thing we do is lay out the procedures for the initial patient encounter and the initial patient assessment. How far away are we going to have a member standing while they're doing that assessment? What are they going to be wearing? And then once we determine that, yes, there may be either we need to have this as a patient under investigation for contracting COVID-19, or we determine they have it. All right, we're going into more precautions. We're setting out procedures for patient treatment and packaging, setting up procedures for the movement of the patient, who should be there, who shouldn't be there, what's the PPE, where should the cot be, and then what's the procedure for transport. Make sure you're notifying the receiving hospital. That receiving hospital may not take it. That receiving hospital may forward you to somewhere else. That receiving hospital is probably going to give you direction on which entrance to use, how to bring them into the building. So you need to communicate that so you don't waste any time. So you'll have those procedures. And then there's post-call. There's going to be the decon. And then for all of this, there should be reporting and record keeping. So that's how we determine that's how we look at policy and procedure.
Very well said. Well, Scott, any other final thoughts or comments that you want to make to the audience here today before we close out here?
No, I just, you know, look forward to talking to you more and, you know, discussing these issues as they come up and helping out the listeners.
Thanks, Scott, for everything you're doing, and I look forward to talking again soon.
Okay.
One of my biggest takeaways from Scott's discussion is around fire service culture adoption. And a lot of this starts from the top down. We are dealing with a fire service that is not in the 1970s, 80s, or 90s. We're dealing with firefighters that are 20 years old, you know, coming onto the fire service, and they learn differently and they respond to leadership differently. And hearing examples of a fire chief actually getting their hands dirty, mopping the floor, and showing that, hey, this is a new firefighter that needs to be treated with respect and everyone should see this, that sent messages and that really can set the tone for how everyone should be treated. Bullying is something to not take for as a joking matter, something everyone deserves to be treated with respect. And having a fire chief do something like that really sets a tone, as well as not only with bullying, but really from a top-down perspective, showing that, hey, it's important to follow these wellness initiatives. And to have a fire chief that's doing it allows a program to actually be successful, as opposed to instead bullying someone for wanting to take on wellness initiatives. Hope you enjoyed listening. Make sure to listen and look for more of Scott's content, and we'll talk to you soon.